Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Hancock, and this is the final episode of Winging It in Motown Radio, in which Brendan Smith is still a Red Wing.
Old prediction time.
So while we hold back our tears of sadness or joy, you can have either, I would like to welcome in JJ, Peter, and Lauren. How are you three doing tonight?
Wonderful.
Greatest night ever.
Doing well here.
I think we should just get into this because the bye week is here and bye weeks are dumb. I don't like the bye week, by the way. We can get into it later if we want, but we've got a week until the trade deadline. We saw the Wings this past weekend win two games against teams we didn't think they'd beat in Washington and Pittsburgh. Then they come back home and lose to the Islanders with Kyle and Ann in the building. And here we are at the bye. What the hell do we think right now?
We think we've seen this team all freaking season, right?
Yeah.
Too much.
Stumble out of the gate, then won six straight, even though their performance during those straight victories wasn't exactly great. Fell apart, like, won some key games, like, okay, now we're getting on track. And then they, like, drop a 4-0 game to Arizona, and then just a bunch of suck, and that's exactly what we were expecting. Like, I wrote at the beginning of February that it'd be nice if the Red Wings were be able to win a bunch of games to help the sell, and then they lost, what, five straight before jumping back on and taking out the class of the conference, getting everybody. I don't know. At that point, I think we were all just like, do we even want them to beat the Islanders? Because if they beat the Islanders and then they beat the Canucks in the very last game before the trade deadline, is Kenny still going to bother selling? And so, I don't know. Like, I hate watching the Red Wings lose, especially that game wasn't exactly entertaining against the Islanders. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried that another win would have concerned me in regards to the Wings' willingness to sell, which I'm fully on board with them needing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a realistic concern going into that third game against the Islanders, because, you know, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, what had happened before, let's see, like you said, what was it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight losses, right? And you're looking at it, you're like, okay, well, of course they're going to lose to Washington, of course they're going to lose to Pittsburgh, you know, and then at that point, it's going to be so obvious. I mean, you know, it's gotten to the point where, you know, we talked about this a little while ago. You know, it's gotten to the point where, you know, the beat writers are finally coming around to seeing the obvious, you know, only when it's right in front of their face and they can't avoid it any longer. I mean, like, it was on was it the Islanders game? I think it was the Islanders game. You know, on the Fox Sports Detroit broadcast, they're still pushing, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, if we win tonight, you know, we have a real chance of making the playoffs, you know, we're only 4 points back.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. I'm going to interject there for a second. They have to make people want to watch the game. So,
like, yeah,
they're
that's
just
right.
Doing a job there. It's different than a beat writer.
Well, sure, sure.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, I mean, I agree. I think I conflated two things at the end. I think the Fox Sports Detroit thing has bothered me a little bit, because the last couple of games I've just heard nothing but how great Steve Ott is, and I think I'm just reflexively angry at them.
Oh, was Helene on TV? Lauren, you can jump in.
Okay. I'm trying to talk. I would actually even argue the team that we've seen all season, like JJ said, it's really this team that we've seen, like, I'd say even as far back as like 2013, because we, you know, and that was obviously compressed into a shorter season, but we would see a lot of that where it's like, oh, we'd come out and beat, you know, one of the better teams in the league, and then all of a sudden you lose to, you know, a really bad team, and then you know, you just go on this bad stretch of games where you can't get out of your own way. And, you know, it's been a pattern for this team for a really long time that, you know, it shouldn't surprise anybody right by now. This year it's just happened to go the way of losing. Like, we've gone on longer losing streaks. We've gone, you know, we've done the, you know, blown the 2-goal leads, or like given up the late tying goal or the late go ahead goal or whatever. Like, that's been a pattern for a long time. You know, so it's just like, you know, it's not really anything new. It's just, it's worse this year. And I would say, you know, like getting to those last games before the trade deadline, is, you know, it's kind of been the same thing where it's like, oh, well, you know, if we start winning games just before the deadline, like, oh, we're going to have a chance. We're going to get that trade deadline acquisition of some injured player coming back. And, you know, if we can just get that veteran presence piece at the deadline, then we'll have a chance to make a run. Like, you know, that isn't anything new for this team either. And it's not anything new for what we kind of expect from management. So yeah, while it's nice that we won the games against Washington and Pittsburgh, it's just like, oh crap. Like, what are we supposed to do? And like Peter said on the broadcast the other night, I believe, I can't remember what the exact numbers were, but they were like, oh, they need to get like 35 points out of like 44 to get to 92 points. And and that's the threshold for the playoffs. They actually said that. And I was like, and it was basically in the tone of, so you're saying there's a chance. And it's like, well, yes, but no. Like, if you watch the team all season, it's not going to happen unless we somehow acquire like the top players on every team. And even then, it's probably not going to happen, you know? So I'm very interested to see what's going to happen in the coming days. I'm very nervous because, as you guys all know, I hate trades, but it's going to be very interesting to see what this team actually does this year.
It's kind of been a sad realization that I know at least a couple of our commenters have pointed out, but you kind of don't really feel like saying out loud, but I'm going to anyway, that you realize what the Wings had done in previous years that used to drive us nuts when they would be in the position where we're in February and in the running for the President's Trophy is play down to shitty teams and end up losing and piss us off. And then you have to think, that's what Pittsburgh and Washington did to us this weekend. They just played down to us because they didn't take us seriously enough.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. It hurts. Dang it.
That makes me sad.
I mean, just this past weekend, it was fun to watch in the sense of the team hasn't won, especially like winning 5-2 against Pittsburgh. Like, that was cool. I enjoyed it. In the grand scheme of things, no one, I don't think, is actively rooting for them to lose, but we know it's the right thing for the future of the team. So it's not the worst, you know. So when they lost to the Islanders and it was like, well, we're back. Cool. Just get back on the train and keep riding it. You know, you guys talked about the trade deadline. Michael Stone was traded earlier this week. What was it? A third and a conditional fifth. Is that kind of, I mean, it hasn't really opened the floodgates, but it's the first trade we've really gotten as we approach the deadline. You know, obviously Vanek is, I think he was sixth on like TSN's trade list the other day, their latest one. You know, we know Smith has fielded a lot of calls. I mean, let's start with Smith here. Not just because he's my best friend, but because, what was it? I think it was the Nichols on Hockey guy on Twitter who always transcribes all the interviews with all the Canadian guys. He was saying that Bob McKenzie said, you know, the Wings have received a ton of calls on Smith. And I know Kyle put a post up about this too on Wing It at Motown, so go read it. But the Wings are circling back with Smith's agent to see what it would take to sign him to an extension before they explore the possibility of trading him. Where do we stand? Where do you guys stand on this? Obviously, I think the obvious answer is trade him, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't see why you don't trade a pending UFA defenseman who is obviously not a top pair guy on a team that desperately needs to find a top pair guy. Like, he's a serviceable defenseman. He's not having a very good year, but he's still good player, but he's not the right player for the Red Wings going forward in the rebuild that they need. So get whatever value you can. I mean, if something stupid happens, like, I don't even know what the deal that I would want Smith back on at this point, because at this point I want to find out what we have in guys like Russo and maybe even Dan Renouf and Ville Saarijärvi and those kind of guys, where, like, I do think that we should have some veterans around. And so I guess if we end up trading away Mike Green, and if we like long-term retire Cronwall, then Smith could be like a stopgap veteran. But even then, like, I don't know. The guy says he loves it here, and I admit I love Brendan Smith more than I hate him. I just like to get a rise out of Jeff, mostly. But yeah, I don't know. Like, just trade him and then sign him back in the summer. Just do the same thing with Vanek, and we'll just continue to have 8 second and third pairing defensemen forever.
Where do you want to go? Or?
What do you think?
Okay.
For me, I think at this point, if you're actually getting calls on him, you know, it's time to pull the trigger. You know, find the best value that's out there, whether it's, you know, prospects coming back, or if it's, you know, decent picks, you know, whatever it is. Like, he's a guy that's like, you know, he's kind of been on that edge of, well, do we keep him for his potential value to the Red Wings, or do we trade him for his potential value in some hypothetical deal? And it's, you know, it's always been on that edge. And now he's gotten to the point where it's like, well, he was always that guy that, you know, you want to give him more time. You want to see what he can turn into. Like, he still has potential to develop into something. Well, we're pretty far past, you know, that potential stage now. So it's, to me, it's to the point where, like, if there are teams that want him, trade him. Because if we are going to do this whole rebuild thing, we have to get the young guys in the league, in the NHL early, whether it's Saarijärvi, Hicketts. You know, I'd really love to see Russo up. There's definitely some other guys in Grand Rapids that have been kind of making noise this year. But giving bigger roles to Jensen or Ouellette, or, you know, finding a way to keep Sproul on the roster, you know, keeping Smith around does just add to, or kind of maintains the logjam on defense that we have had for a long time. And, you know, again, no one's calling on Erickson, no one's calling on Cronwall. There's probably, you know, there's going to be, you know, trade partners out there for a guy like Mike Green. Whether or not they end up doing that, I don't know. But with the possibility of actually getting value for Smith, you know, instead of just letting him go in the offseason, you know, I think it's time that we get a deal done.
Maybe it's just that Holland's getting a lot of calls, just they're all from me, and I don't have any actual assets to trade for Brendan Smith.
You mean no, he won't take a bag of pucks?
He won't. I mean, do you think there's any possibility that teams are calling, but they're offering a whole bunch of nothing, so this is Holland trying to say, like, fine, I'll re-sign him then. I'll up your bag of pucks to a seventh-round pick.
I mean, I think, it could be.
Yeah?
It could be, but I don't know. I mean, if you look at what's available, you know, obviously, you know, if you're looking for a defensive upgrade, I mean, Shattenkirk is, you know, the by far the best you're going to get. I mean, far and away.
Right.
But after that, I mean, it drops off, you know? So if you're a team like, you know, we talked about Pittsburgh before, you know, you got, I think Schultz and Mata are out right now. At least one of them is out for a few weeks. I mean, like, it's not like they're out like day to day. I mean, they're out for a while. I think Schultz had a concussion, right? And then Matt is out for like
six weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, like, they're a perfect fit for somebody like that, because if you look at their defensive core last year, I mean, if you look at their defense going into the playoffs last year, you're like, holy shit, how could they win the Stanley Cup with these guys? You know, I mean, Ben Lovejoy was on. I mean, like, look, you know, look at their defensive core. You know,
so does that mean I'm going to have to root for the Penguins?
Ew.
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not saying like, I mean, I hate making like predictions like this stuff, just because there's so many moving parts and there's so many things that we don't know about, you know, like, we're trying to make predictions with, you know, maybe 10% of the information that's available. But I mean, Pittsburgh does seem like it would be an obvious fit. Because I do think Smith, you know, could definitely be a good fit for certain teams. You know, like I think he could have, he could be playing better than he has this year, with different partners, perhaps. You know, so I mean, I do think he has value. How much value, I don't know, but I mean, I do think he has value. I would not be surprised at all to see him get moved.
I think Smith to Pittsburgh makes a lot of sense, yeah.
I just hope he ends up in Edmonton. I don't know why. I just find Smith in Edmonton to be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah, he could mimic a play in Edmonton. My concern there about the concept of is Ken Holland just not gotten any like value offers out of him? Would we have accepted a third and a conditional fifth for Smith?
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah. So
like, no question.
Is that something that Calgary didn't offer Ken Holland, or did Ken Holland say no to that offer? Like, because you know Calgary would have had to have done their due diligence. They had to have had something, had to have a talk about Brendan Smith before they traded for Michael Stone. Yeah. So there's the question. I don't know why they wouldn't have. Like, you can argue that Stone is probably a little bit more valuable than Smith. You could make the opposite argument too. So did Calgary say, you know, take a fourth and fuck off, or you know, the best we're going to give you is that fifth rounder, or did Ken Holland try to hardball and drive them straight to Stone?
I mean, what, I don't know off the top of my head Calgary's cap situation, what's Stone's cap hit and whatnot.
Arizona held half of his salary, so it's a $2 million cap hit to Calgary. At what's left of a $2 million cap, but I don't think they're anywhere near the cap.
No, I don't think so.
No, they're pretty close to it. They are currently at $2.8 million. They could have fit him.
Okay, I mean maybe that. I mean, if you're Holland, you just, and some team says we'll take Brendan Smith, we'll give you a third and a fifth, but you have to keep half his salary. We'll just do it. He's a UFA, so who cares?
Yeah, that's super,
especially at this point of the year,
right? I don't know. If Ken Holland did that and somehow turned Brendan Smith into like a second round pick, ha, wow. Okay. I know we say a lot of mean things about him, but I would applaud Ken Holland for that.
Do you think there's any merit to the idea that maybe Ken Holland is still kind of stuck on the whole, like, well, Smith used to be a first round pick. Like, I need to get a, you don't think so? Like, I'm not saying. I don't think he would hold out for a first round in return, because that's just stupid talk. But, you know, there's some people that, you know, still hold on to this idea that where you were drafted, you know, however many years ago, somehow has an impact on your value later on in your career.
I mean, he was drafted, what, 10 years ago? 07, I think.
Yeah.
Kendall was taken with a higher pick than Smith was, and he got traded last year. So
if this was 3 years ago, maybe Ken Holland thinks that. But now, I can't. I think
it's a good point.
It's not a strategy, though.
I do think that the concept of Ken Holland throwing good money after bad is something that's been holding him back, and that's exactly what that is.
Yeah.
Kendall was a scratch for – he was, like, deep in the doghouse for a while, though, too, so I don't –
Yeah,
I
mean, Kendall have been totally
been in and out, so but Kendall yeah, it's had definitely it
works. Not the same.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. So,
all right, let's move on to Vanek. I mean, he's gone. He's good as gone. So it's not so much the question of if he'll get traded, but what the Wings will get for him. What I mean, I guess we go around. You think we get a first for him? What return would make you disappointed when trading Thomas Vanek?
I think 1 second with no additional value would honestly make me mad. And anything worse than that.
So if it's a second and a prospect, then you're like, you're not happy, but okay. But
I think it would depend on the prospect too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's my level of acceptability, is not a throwaway prospect.
Yeah. I mean, I really think a first is what he should get, especially with the weak draft this year.
Yeah, do you think teams probably more willing to trade that first rounder just because it's not that great of a draft?
I think so.
I would imagine, yeah.
They ought to be. Who was it that was it Custance who said that every time he talks about teams not wanting to trade a first, he gets a text from a team executive that says, "Stop saying that. Of course, people are going to trade their first. This is a bad draft class."
I think that's who it was. Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, but I do remember seeing that.
The only thing that worries me is that I think that Vanek would be a really good fit in Chicago, and I don't think Chicago, like, I'm worried about their willingness to trade away their first round pick in a year in which they're hosting the draft.
Yeah, but your fan base doesn't care if you win a Stanley Cup.
That's true. So I think it'd be freaking dumb to hold on to your first round pick just because you're hosting the draft, but
yeah, they'd get lambasted for that.
Yeah, they should be. Fuck them.
I agree.
Los Angeles also seems like a good fit, and they don't seem to love holding on to their first round picks too much either. So, I think a first round pick is definitely doable. If we don't get that, then two second rounders, a second round and a prospect. I mean, shit, I'd like a first rounder and a throwaway prospect.
Sure.
And I think that it's not totally crazy outside the realm of possibility where asking for that is stupid. But if Vanek goes for a third round pick, that's a failure.
That would be bad.
If Vanek gets you one second round pick, that's a failure.
Well, if Michael Stone's getting you a third and a fifth,
yeah,
then Vanek better be a whole hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of a segue and I had nothing. Mm-hmm. Are we done on Vanek?
Yeah,
it's pretty obvious.
What's we got? Green?
Green, I don't think Green gets traded. I mean, we just run through these guys real quick, answer half of our mailbag questions probably anyway here. Green, yeah. Do we think he gets traded? Anyone?
No.
I don't think so.
I'd say maybe 25%. I mean, could happen, but I'd be surprised to see it.
Tatar.
Outside chance of Tatar not... I'd say Tatar is probably twice as likely as Nyquist, and I'd put Tatar at 50-50.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Tatar or Nyquist is much higher chance than Green.
I can't see them being moved either, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Tatar has basically been ready to get moved since the summer. They've been asking him the question, like, what if you get traded? Like, well, it is what it is, so... I think his resurgence, the fact that he's not currently suspended, the fact that he's still a pending RFA, all work in the favor of getting better value and more interest. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, I think the RFA thing is a huge difference, you know.
And I honestly have no idea. Like, I'm too biased and not good enough at trade speculation to tell you what would piss me off as far as too small a return for Tatar. Like, I want to say a third rounder would piss me off there too.
Yeah, I think you're going to have more with that.
But, like, I don't know if he's worth a first rounder. Like, you kind of want to get, like, good prospects. Like, picks there. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I think, to go back to what we said before, like, if you look at potential, you know, I think Tatar has the potential to develop in a higher, you know, performer's position than Smith does. You know, I mean, I think he has definitely a much higher ceiling. So I think, you know, he should get a better pick.
Well, yeah, trading away Tatar has a big possibility of looking back and realizing that we got freaking ripped off on that deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when Prashant listens to this, he's fist pumping at that because
he's out in the North End right now. So.
That's a good thing.
This family.
It's kind of late in Boston.
Well, okay, maybe he was. He might be done. I don't know. anyone else? Who did we forget? You don't see anyone else getting traded, right? All the usual suspects. Steve Ott.
Steve Ott for an eighth round pick. We're just
there is a lot of buzz going on about him, and I think trading him makes sense, and I think that there is going to be a team that's going to throw a bone on that.
I've been saying trading him makes sense.
Don Sweeney trade us a third? For Steve Ott? He's like a better version of Zach Rinaldo. Eh?
Yeah, Zach Rinaldo got a third. Paul Gostad once got a first. So, yeah, give us a decent pick for Steve Ott.
Steve Mr. Hockey Ott.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Just making up names for what he does.
And let's see. Drew Miller requested a trade.
No one wanted him for free, though.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the sentiment, but just no.
I would honestly trade him for future considerations.
Oh, sure.
It would clear $75,000 off our cap.
But who's going to want that?
I don't know. Maybe some other team wants to go on a AHL run.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you could just make the future considerations be like, Drew Miller plays every game in the regular season for you. You have to give us a 7th-round pick. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But all right. So this time next week, we'll have a different-looking team, I'm sure. Well, a little bit at least.
Much more time.
Around the league. I don't know if you guys heard that.
I did. Around the league.
Yeah, yeah, and then I dropped my wedding ring on my keyboard, and then we made this noise. Anyway, let's try this again.
Which key did it hit?
The key to your heart. I don't know.
Okay. Is that an Apple key? I'm not familiar.
No, I just was trying to be clever. I'm going to take a moment here, and then we'll start this again. Around the league.
I can't imagine how mad Kyle would be if he were here hosting.
Kyle, screw you.
You're just going off the rails.
Well, you know, it's been like months since I've done this. I just woke up from a nap and I was like, I gotta plug in my headset and talk about hockey and training Brennan Smith. It's like a freaking funeral over here. Okay? Relax. Screw around the league. Like, I had to watch the Bruins because of work and they win a lot and I don't know. Matthews and Laine played the other day, and suck it, Matthews. Go Laine.
That is a fun rivalry to watch, and also to root for Laine.
Did you see that goal he had? That was ridiculous.
Yes.
Like the one timer off the back foot. I mean, that was just insane.
I saw on NHL.com something that made me laugh today. They were talking about the Kings making a playoff run, and it was essentially Jonathan Quick is their deadline acquisition. And it made me sad and bittersweet for old times. I hope the Kings miss the playoffs. Fuck them. Yeah, at this point, like, I don't even know who I'm rooting for out West. Like, I know that I'm probably rooting for the Western Conference to win the Cup this year.
Really? See, I don't think I would be. I'd like to see Ovi win.
Yeah, you know what? There it is. It's got to be Ovi. It's his turn.
But in the West, though, because Washington's not going to make it past the 2nd round.
That's true. Yeah.
So in the West, can I offer a suggestion? This might get me lambasted by Wings fans, but what about Nashville?
Ooh.
They have demoted Mike Ribeiro off their team to the, you know, harsh cold of Wisconsin.
Yeah, they traded for Subban.
I can get over James Neal.
I wouldn't actively root for them, but I mean, I wouldn't be like angry if they won, I guess, is where I stand.
I guess most of it's just PK Subban.
I mean, I just look at it as teams I don't want to win from the West. Chicago, like, St. Yeah. Louis, Minnesota, Anaheim.
Like literally everybody else.
Who I'd be cool with winning? Edmonton. Sharks wouldn't, I wouldn't be, I'd be indifferent about. Nashville probably falls in that category. Calgary won, that's fine. LA can fuck off, like, just because they've won before.
Yeah.
Like, if Winnipeg made the playoffs, okay, whatever.
No.
So, I mean, and essentially, my judgment is completely clouded in the sense that, like, where does Brendan Smith end up? I'm probably going to just end up rooting for whatever playoff team Brendan Smith gets on, so That's where I'm at.
What about you? Used to love Yarncroc.
Me? Nah, yeah. I don't know who that is.
You were no, you were super high on
I'm
him.
I'm Team Shayen.
Oh, don't remind me.
Yeah, you know, his 20 goals this year. The only bold prediction I'm gonna miss. I'm gonna go 4 for 5.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah, I was mentioning that in our team chat the other day for you listeners that. It's sad that it used to be the best defense against the, hey, remember that that awful Legwon trade was, well, we had too many young centers that were running out of options, and it came down to it was either Shane or Yarncroc, and prior to this year, it was, oh, well, that, yeah, of course, yeah, Shane. And, well, thanks for that, Riley.
I was looking at the East, and the crazy thing is that if the playoffs started today, Montreal is the top team in the Atlantic. They would play the Rangers as the wild card, and the Rangers have 6 more points than Montreal. Like, that's crazy. Like, unless something changes, Montreal is going to play a team that has better, more points than them, and they're going to have home.
Montreal's doing their own version of the South Tank and trying to lose the Atlantic Division so they can play some shitty team like Ottawa, Toronto, Boston, or Florida in the first round instead of the Rangers. So, yeah.
That's very smart, yeah.
Boston wants to win the Atlantic. Florida, whatever. Take it. You go play that more difficult team. We'll play the shitty Canadian team.
How do we feel about being happy about Ottawa potentially winning the Cup?
I don't mind Ottawa because I like Bonks Mullet, so.
Yeah.
And I like Erik Karlsson.
I'm kind of indifferent to Ottawa.
It's like, whatever.
Ottawa winning the Cup would infuriate Toronto fans. Dion Phaneuf would win the Cup in Ottawa.
See, oh, that would be amazing. That would be
fun. I could get on board with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen, but.
You never know.
I could probably, like, live off of the Twitter reaction to that for about a month. Oh, that would be fantastic.
I actually despise Ottawa outside of Erik Karlsson, so that would just make me angry.
What about Columbus?
No.
No.
I can't get past Tortorella.
I couldn't root for them, unless Brendan Smith's on their team. I couldn't root for them, but I probably wouldn't, like, vehemently, it wouldn't upset me. I think the only teams that, like, it would upset me in the East. I got to pull up the standings again now.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't. I don't want to see Pittsburgh win. I don't want to see Montreal win. And I don't want to see Boston win. The rest, I'd kind of be like, yeah, whatever.
But Florida, you got Jágr?
It doesn't bother me. Yeah. They can win. It'd be fine.
He's already won.
Oh, whatever. Why do I hate Florida?
Like, but, yeah, he hasn't won in his 50s yet, so.
Because Riley Smith?
Why would I?
I really hate.
Wouldn't I, low-key. Wouldn't I like them? Maybe Brendan can go to Florida and the Bash brothers.
I low-key despise Vincent Trocheck.
Yep. Oh God! Oh, I'm 100% on board with that.
He's the Sunrise Tyler Johnson. Fuck that guy. But I mean, I guess in ranking, yeah, I guess like. Pittsburgh in the East would be my least favorite.
Oh, Toronto. Team to I win. Definitely don't want Toronto to win.
Oh, yeah. Toronto. Yeah. Okay. Toronto, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Montreal, Boston. As far as the teams that are actually in the playoffs right now. In the West, the ranking from least, like the worst would be Chicago winning it again. And then it's honestly a toss up between Minnesota and Anaheim.
I don't know. You dislike Minnesota more than I dislike Minnesota. I mean, I don't like Minnesota, but I don't like Anaheim.
Their fans are so dumb.
Yeah.
And Anaheim doesn't have any fans.
You interact with them more than I do, so that's why you have them. I'm just kind of like, I like their green jerseys. That's cool. Like, whatever. I don't know. I got nothing else from around the league. You guys give a crap about the rest of this league?
Not really.
No, I really tried.
Great. Then I think... We need to just get to the two parts of the podcast that everyone cares about the most. First off, positivity corner. So, JJ, what are you positive about today? Is this still how we do this? I don't know. It's been a while.
Oh, I usually don't have to start.
You don't have to start? All right, fine. Then, Peter, what are you positive about?
Shit. I was going to use JJ's time to think of something. Okay, I will. I'm going to do a little bit of a throwback. I don't think I talked about this on here, but going back to when we had our Winging It in Motown weekend. One of the things that I eventually got in the mail from that is I have a Farewell to the Joe Puck signed by Athanasiu and Mantha, and so that is going up in my memorabilia collection, which. Right now also consists of a Roberto Luongo signed Islanders puck. So let's hope that these two, do well for the team that they signed the puck for, as opposed to the other one that did not work out so well for the original team. Pretty cool memorabilia, like a little keepsake to remember the trip by and this year and everything.
Nice.
Lauren?
I will say that I did enjoy the wins this week over Washington and Pittsburgh. And while the Wings did not win yesterday on my birthday, which that honestly didn't bum me out too much because it's kind of an expected thing. Like they lose more often than they win on my birthday. But Zetterberg scored a pretty cool goal in the game last night. So that made me pretty happy.
JJ?
Is it your turn? No, I will say that's a perfect transition, though, because I will say that Zetterberg has been a lot of fun to watch this season. I know we spend a lot of time talking about how the development of the kids has been great, but earlier in the season, I was probably a little unfairly down on Z, as the captain of the team struggling, but he's really separated himself out as the guy who does not accept what is happening. And it is very clear every game that he is giving it his all and that he's playing it exceptionally well. So I'm having a lot of fun watching him and once again being reminded that as a whole, the fan base is probably not appreciated Zetterberg as much as they should have.
I have a question out of that. Do you seeing how Zetterberg has what he's done with Mantha and then knowing what he did with Larkin last year and how Larkin's kind of taken a little sophomore slump this year, is he kind of like the kid whisperer?
Yeah, the old two kids and an old goat just in reverse.
Yeah, you almost you know, next year you can put Nolan Patrick with him, maybe Nico Hershier. Okay, positivity corner. I finally met Prashanth for the first time today. I have spoken to him numerous times and talked about Brendan Smith numerous times, but I finally got to have intelligent, lengthy conversation about loving Brendan Smith with someone who shares the same feeling as me, and it was such a positive, worthwhile, enlightening, beer-filled experience.
Ezra, all the best ones.
It was definitely a positive experience. Yes. So that's all I got. I got nothing else. So should we do some reader questions?
Yeah, let's do some reader questions. All right. First off, I want to start off by apologizing to Happy Pappy 96. Last time we did this, he asked a pretty lengthy question about Zetterberg that I cut all of the context out of and made it sound like a really stupid question. So I apologize for that. I will say that I'm probably going to do that again this time too, because you guys still ask a lot of long questions, but I'll try not to do it specifically to Happy Pappy. So we'll start off with Chai Wings Guy, who wants to know, he'd say, we'd love to get your take on the power play moving forward and evolving next year. Should somebody be fired or replaced on the coaching staff?
Not the coaching staff, but someone definitely should be fired into the sun, taken away from the power play at all times, and that's Cronwall.
It's got to be Cronwall, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's just hard to watch.
We've talked at length. His lack of mobility is costing him passing lanes. It's costing him the willingness to jump down lower for better shooting lanes. All the passes to him take a little bit longer to get there and also to come back, and it just kind of slows everything down. So
yeah, I would say, I mean, for a while Zetterberg was kind of a black hole in terms of holding the puck, but he's that hasn't been much of an issue for a while now. Like for a while it was both of them on the same unit, you know, and that was terrible. But I think Zetterberg's gotten a lot better at moving the puck quicker. But Cronwall is just, yeah.
Yeah, but the other point is, Cronwall being on the power play is a coaching decision, so
yeah,
there's true. Something to be said about that.
Yeah.
Fire Blashill.
And a lot of people are saying that, yeah. Would entering and keeping the zone without the drop pass change things drastically?
God, I'd like to see it. I'm so over the drop pass.
I think it's a red herring.
I mean, yeah. I like other teams do it, too. I remember at least one of the recent games, maybe it was even like, was it Washington or Pittsburgh? Like one of them, I saw them do it a couple times. I think it's just like who you're dropping it to. And plus, I mean, it shouldn't be the only thing you do.
I think it's amazing to see how easily Athanasiu enters the zone carrying the puck with speed, and wonder why we don't do that with Larkin more often, too.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is that the problems with the power play, I mean, they have to be on coaching. It's coaching and personnel, and it's mostly that they are not moving consistently as a five-man unit to appropriately stretch and or compress the defenders. They get themselves, they skate into a corner, or they give the opponent to lose pucks well enough. They're taking too long into the zone. Like I said, I don't think the drop pass is really that big a deal. It's just the way that they're doing it. They're just, everything is just too slow. Mm. So, yeah, fire the coach. Lauren, what do you
think? I have a problem with, like, going the fire the coach route, because we essentially did that this past off season and it didn't really change anything. Obviously, if you have, like, if the issue is that the players on the power play are the wrong choices, it's, you know, it's a personnel decision made by the coaches. But I don't think it's the power play coach himself. And it's, but I think it's just an unwillingness to cut the time of, you know, our big name players, you know. And whenever they do try and shake up the power play to try and get something going, because, you know, that worked really well this season, they try putting players like Riley Sheahan on there, or like shove Abdelkader in front of the net again, even though he blocks more pucks and, you know, than he deflects in. Or you put Steve Ott on the power play for some unknown reason. Like, they're, you know, the general idea of, oh, let's try switching it up is good, but they make the most bass-ackwards decisions on the players they actually put on the power play. But, you know, that's been a reluctant thing for the coaches to do for a long time. Like, it took a long time for players like Tatar Nyquist to get, like, consistent power play time under Babcock. You know, so it's very frustrating that trend has continued with the young players. You know, they like Athanasiu and Mantha, like, got taken off the power play recently, and it, like, for no reason, it seemed. So, or it's in response to something on the defensive side, and it's like, well, they're in a very offensive situation, so why? I don't know. But the point is you can say it is a coaching problem, because it certainly is, but until the entire coaching staff changes its philosophy, you know, it's not, you know, nothing's going to change. And it seems like the only way you can completely change that would be to turn over the entire coaching staff. And that just, we really don't want to go down that route. That is not the way to go.
Yeah, that's really well said. Let's see. Groot Squad asked a question that Peter already answered in the comments, so I'll skip over that. Timmy Timmons wants to know, what is Riley Sheahan doing wrong?
Not putting the puck in the net.
How should he fix it?
Score. Wait till his shooting percentage gets higher.
Hard to argue with that.
His shot rate isn't very good either. I think he's doing better. Like, he had been doing a good job of battling in the corners for pucks, but he's still not getting open, and like he's cost himself to the point where he doesn't deserve line mates who are going to make a ton of space for him anyway, so it's even harder. It's like a little quicksand for him, but keep shooting the puck, do a little bit better at it, work a little bit harder, and eventually one has to go in. I mean
like, was it the Pittsburgh game where, like, I thought he had scored? Because, like, it was he was open. He had a great setup. It wasn't, it was a good shot. It was just a good, like, I think it was a good save. Like, I think it was Murray who just got his pad over. But I thought for sure, I was like, hey, he scored. No, I guess he didn't. So, yeah.
I kind of, at this point, putting
your hopes up?
I'm at the point where I want to see him not score for the entire year. Like, I'd be impressed. Well, you know, he makes money. He's fine. He's a professional athlete. I'm not worried about his feelings. But
the dogs.
The puppies and the kitties. Don't you care about them?
Well, you know, if he doesn't play play for the Wings because he can't score, then he has more time for dogs elsewhere.
You're a monster, Jeff.
Yeah, well, we knew that. It's just it would
accept
be.
Accept it.
I don't know. I'd be like, I'm rooting against him for scoring at this point. So.
No, I just don't want him to. Like, I want him to score the just the dumbest way. Like, I don't know if it wanted to be the very last game. To be a game winner or to be like.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. We're going to be at the last game at the Joe. Freaking Riley Sheahan's going to score with like 3 minutes left to give the Wings the 3-2 win.
Either that or like one of those, we're getting pasted 6-0 and he breaks the shutout.
God, if we were losing 6-0 to the Devils.
No, not even the last game of the season, though.
Like, oh, just any game.
Yeah, I want it to be, at this point, it needs to be funny. Like, not an empty net. Like, if it's going to be an empty netter, it'll be like Glendening shoots it on the backhand up the ice, and it hits the top of Sheahan's head and bounces in.
Yeah,
but it's not judged directed in by Sheahan. Or he gets a breakaway to an empty net, and he gets tripped, and he doesn't actually put it into the net, but that's an auto goal.
Yeah,
he does. He gets a goal without actually putting the puck in the net. That's what I want.
That would be amazing.
Like, what about Vanek's behind the net, and then he banks it off of Sheahan and into the goal?
That'll work.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
I still think the breakaway towards an empty net where it gets pulled down, and that would be the best Riley Sheahan goal.
Yeah.
Or Yuri Hidler puts it into his own net for him.
No, or, yeah, that's what I mean. It could be someone else shooting it in. He's just the last guy that touched the puck. they play Pittsburgh, and Brendan Smith shoots it in his own net on Matt Murray, and Sheahan was the one that lost the puck to Brendan Smith. So, therefore, it's Sheahan's goal.
I think I'd like it if they planned that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Like, Sheahan passes it directly to Brendan Smith, and then Brendan Smith like winks at Murray, and Murray just gets out of the way.
This is Smith has been traded to Pittsburgh, everybody.
Right.
Okay, yeah, we got that.
Okay. BKirk58 wants to know, if we do end up trading away guys like Vanek and Smith, who do we want to be called up to take their places? So, like, who comes up to replace Vanek?
Yurko.
Okay, so who comes up to sit in favor of you?
Svechnikov.
I want to see Hicketts up.
Well, Hicketts is a defenseman.
Well, for Smith is a defenseman despite his lack of defensive abilities.
I think I definitely like to see Svechnikov as long as he's ready. He's ready to get a good shot.
If Svechnikov comes up, he has to play. There's no point calling up just a sit.
Right.
You know, a black ace for a tank run.
Yeah.
That would be depressing.
Drew Miller.
Oh, yeah. Matt Dorito.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the call up, and there's actually a question way down by Griffin's Nest that basically calls for calling up FERC. I think that might actually be a really good idea.
Oh, they should call up FERC to play in those back-to-back games in Carolina.
That'd be good. But yeah, like to replace Vanek, a right-handed offensive only doesn't play defense guy. They're not even close to the same, but I mean, Ferk is the tanking version of Vanek. Might as well.
Yeah.
I'm all in.
Set him up in the OB spot on the power play and just see if that fixes two things.
Mm.
Nothing else would be fun because I love Ferk puns.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that I'd really like to see Russo called up in advance.
Russo or Hicketts, that's it.
Yeah. Svechnikov to play, like, I don't know about Tyler Bertuzzi. I think he'll be a roster regular next year, hopefully on the on the third and fourth line. So while we're trying to tank, I would rather give that opportunity to more kids who should have a higher ceiling, I guess.
I mean, it's the perfect opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you got to lose? Maybe they can even play
games
in one game.
The point is to lose games in a tank, though.
I know, but he said, what do you got to lose?
Yeah.
And I said games.
I'd say it was a bad thing.
Touche. Counter 19, in your opinion, how big do you think losing Datsuk has affected the play of guys like Abdelkader, Shan, Nyquist, Tatar?
Well,
basically everybody sucks and they can't not beat a Datsuk, right?
Considering that Abdelkader scored half his goals by Datsuk directing it off of his butt, he misses him the most.
That's not even a question for me. He's definitely the one that has suffered the most in his absence.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole team has suffered from Datsuk being a single-handed possession monster. Like, Franz Nielsen has played well this season, but he's not Datsuk, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. Abdelkader should be able to do more without Datsuk.
Yeah.
And yet.
Yep. And here he is for the next six more years. Eight-Legged Freaks wants to know, at this point, what do you think it would take for Chris Illich to move in a different direction with front office personnel?
Not much, actually. I don't know. Like, part of me thinks, like, yeah, they could miss the playoffs, and, like, he'd just be like, see ya, Holland, and just go in a different direction this year. I guess I don't think that will happen, but I would not be shocked. Like, if something like that, I would be like, whoa! I'd be like, oh, okay. All right, here we go.
I think at this point it would be surprising to me if the ownership, Chris Illich specifically, did not already have a plan for what's going to happen after Holland and did not already have in their mind when Holland is gone.
Well, I mean, increasingly with the rumors that Holland's done after, he's got 1 year left on his deal, whether he goes to Toronto or he just retires or he moves up in the organization, I'm sure there's some plan in place. But now here's the question. Mike's gone. Does Chris have a different mindset or a different thought process with this team? You know, and if he's, say Chris didn't like all the stuff Holland's done the last few years, but it was Mike was the one saying, no, he gets to do what he wants. Like, we don't know that dynamic behind the scenes. So maybe Chris is like, he fires Holland and he brings someone else to do the rebuild. You know, there's I think a lot more unknowns than
the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that Chris Illich is a smart businessman. Mike Illich was a sports fan. Chris Illich is a businessman, and even if he has come to the realization that he's not happy with what Holland has done, I think he probably realizes that the business decision is to let Holland kind of leave on his own term rather than ignominiously firing him, just kicking him to the curb, saying, screw you, we're going in a different direction. Especially if they're going to rebuild, then you just let him work through this summer and then, bye.
Well, what about another train of thought here? If they know Holland's going to leave after next year and missing the playoffs and the whole rebuild is here sooner than expected, do you want the guy who's going to be gone in a year to be pulling the strings on the rebuild, or do you want to bring in the guy now that you know is going to be here throughout the entire process?
I think you have that conversation behind the scenes with Ken Holland and you make that decision whether or not that can be something that's done.
Well, I get that. I'm asking you. What would you want?
Like, Ken Holland, it's your job to fix as many of the mistakes as you can before you retire. And if you can't, I will fire you mid-season and I'll say mean things about you in the lunchroom. I mean, they're an old boys club. I don't know. I think that they're already planning on moving on from Holland after next season. But not before. I think Holland keeps his job throughout the entire next year.
I mean, it seems to be the most likely scenario.
Yeah, I guess I don't really see a situation unfolding where Ken Holland would lose his job. Like, I mean, you think about the reputation that he has built up and, you know, lost parts of it, you know, in the years since then. But there's a legacy there that I just don't see the Wings tarnishing with a firing, because you know, that's just not how this team operates, and that's not how Ken Holland operates. You know, as we've seen from the contracts that he's handed out, the deals that he's made with guys that shouldn't have ever gotten one contract, let alone three, Dan Cleary. I just don't see a situation where Ken Holland would ever be fired, because it's not how he's run things, and he's been with the team long enough that they're gonna, you know, give him the same treatment that he has given to the team for a long time, and that's, you know, respect and you know, whatever. So yeah, I there's no way that they don't have a plan, because they have to know that, you know, his time is kind of up. It is unfortunate that, you know, I don't really like the idea that he is going to be around for another year, but yeah, they've got to have a plan in place for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The next two questions are trade questions, so I'm going to skip right over this and head out to Sugar Mouse's question, which also says Sugar Mouse. Can you give us some insight into how Ken Holland went from being a brilliant GM in the pre-salary cap years to being a GM whose moves make no logical sense? For example, blah, 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 Zetterberg, Datsuk, and we got a great team, and then we didn't have such a great team. Can you please give us some insight into that and how that happens?
Salary cap?
Yeah, I mean, that's the answer, right?
I mean, yeah. the whole drafting thing, back in the day, we had guys over in Europe and spent a lot more money, didn't we, than other teams? And now there's more eyes on prospects all over the world these days than before. So you can't find a guy like Nick Lidstrom and wait till the third round to draft him, like, because you're the only one that's seen him. Or like Datsuk, where you accidentally find Datsuk in some little town in Russia in the mid-90s, and no one else sees him. Everyone sees him these days. So it's the whole drafting, in my opinion, scouting is more difficult in the sense that the competition is tougher.
I mean, I think the other, you know, I know I said this, you know, little snarky answer, which is still most of it. But I think he hasn't adapted to, you know, that it doesn't make sense to sign the players he's signing to long-term deals. You know, if you look at the teams that are successful, you know, they pretty much sign, you know, their top two line guys, their top pairing guys, and if they have like a franchise goalie, you know, those are the players that should be getting long-term deals. You know, you don't give 7-year contracts to players that are, you know, middle six players. It doesn't work, you know. And so, I mean, part of it, I think, is maybe just been, you know, slower to adapt to, you know, to things like that in the post salary cap era.
It's too loyal, definitely. To go off your point, like, you don't need 4 years for a guy like Luke Glendening. You can call up a kid who makes $500,000, fill the same role. So,
yeah, I mean, like, it goes into the idea of the rebuild too, is like, you know, what are the things that we have to do? And it's going to be hard to do immediately, but it's like the thing we have to move towards is, you know, getting a lot more value out of our entry level contracts. You know, it's a little harder with defensemen than forwards because, you know, I mean, it is true that in many cases, defensemen do take longer to develop. But, you know, I mean, if you look around the league, I mean, you look at, you know, not even like super elite rookies or something like that. You know, you see, you know, these teams have these, you know, kind of next, you know, maybe next two tier players down, you know, that they get two years of their ES, you know, their entry level contract is in the NHL, you know, producing for the team, you know, for really cheap. And then there are RFAs, and then you get, you know, the bridge deals and stuff, you know, so we really need to move towards getting, you know, better value for that than we have.
I think you touched on it, but I want to get a little bit more specific in terms of how exactly the NHL has changed.
Yeah.
With the salary cap and the whole parity league is, one of the things that you don't really have anymore are teams that are essentially glorified farm teams. Even after the salary cap came out, that's what Nashville was for a very long time. They would draft really well, and they would develop these guys because they'd have plenty of opportunity to give to kids like that. And then when it came time to have to actually pay the market value, they couldn't do it, and they would trade them. I mean, there's a lot of ex-Nashville players that are out there that are just like that. And then that pipeline got shut off. And what Ken Holland did in the midterm, because you figure the 97-98, those were teams that Ken Holland had not architected. The Hall of Fame team was essentially a bought team. And then, but that still gave them the opportunity to take gambles late rounds in the draft and to buy talent. And that was something that had gotten them through. And then that pipeline essentially shut, and drafting became much more important, and franchise draftees became much more prominent, and Ken Holland just did not react to that. And that's what we've seen the Red Wings fall off. And over the years, he's made a lot of sensible gambles that have not worked out. And I think he's gotten more unlucky than bad with a lot of shit. But yeah, he has not figured out the need to draft much better, and they haven't done that. Also, there's been a big brain drain in the organization too. Like Jim Nill and Steve Yzerman. So
I did just see something on Twitter, I want to say Monday, because it's the whatever year anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, blah, blah, blah. It's been all over the place lately, and it's whatever. But I think it was Tom Mitsos that was talking about it, was that the idea of getting the right players and not necessarily the best players is still so ingrained in, like, the hockey executives. Like, you look at how USA Hockey has been constructed for international tournaments the last few years. Like, that's kind of the proliferating ideology in some teams still. Like, you get the role-playing guys, and it's like, well, those guys aren't necessarily the best players. You know, best players and the right players are no longer you know, they're no longer the same thing, and I don't think they ever were the same thing in a lot of cases. But it's that traditional way of thinking that hasn't been filtered out completely, because you do have executives in this old boys club. You know, they kind of end up in a bit of an echo chamber of their own ideas. And that kind of thinking just doesn't leave. So, you know, you get stuck with this cycle of signing veteran presence and, you know, making these trades that don't benefit the team, you know, in the way that you're wanting the team to, like, I don't know, I'm getting off track on my thoughts here, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that needs to change if you want to see like the Wings really make a culture change, is that kind of thinking needs to adapt, and it hasn't, and a lot of other teams have recognized that change and have been successful at implementing that into their organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. I think that Los Angeles and Columbus are two teams that are built all like that too. And of course they're better than the Red Wings right now, but it's a good point. It's that whole, like, right player versus best player thing. Moving on, Mikey Likey Hockey asked a bunch of questions. Of all the likely trade bait targets, who do you think performs the best in any potential new city and why? That's going to be rapid fire, so go ahead, Peter.
Vanek.
Why? Because he's the best?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Lauren. Yeah.
Are we talking Red Wings trades?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'd say Vanek.
Jeff, you're gonna say Smith, right?
Smith, because thumbs up.
All right. What are your thoughts on retaining salary for guys like Howard and Green to make them movable now? Even with a stagnant cap, how much space do we really need? Basically, if we're rebuilding, being at the cap doesn't matter anyway. So why don't we go ahead and retain salary for these guys? What do you think? Yes?
Green, I'd probably lean towards more because you could probably get more from him maybe. Slash, his deal's only got one more year on it. How many does Jimmy have left? Three? One? He's only won two? One as well?
Am I wrong? I might be wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, sure. Do it. Whatever. I don't care.
No, Jimmy Howard has two more seasons after this.
I was going to say, that didn't, 1 year didn't sound quite right.
I'm wrong.
Yeah. Screw it. 2 years. I'll still do it. Sign me up.
Finally, is there a non-zero chance that management actually commits to selling and rebuilding instead of half-assing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a chance.
Yeah.
Would you put it over 10%?
I would put it over 10%.
I'd put it at 10%.
I don't. It's not going to be something that they're going to come right out and say, like, yeah, we're going to try and lose. Or we're totally committing to starting this team over. Like, they're never going to come out and say that, but you know, they're definitely more stealth tank than anything.
I'm going to give it a 33% chance.
Specific.
NMU asks a lot of, does this trade make sense? So let's just jump in. Detroit gets Hayden Fleury and a 2017 third from Carolina for Nyquist and Sproul. That's an overpayment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is Hayden Fleury that good?
Pass.
Yeah.
Detroit has to retain $1.25 million to get a 2017 fourth rounder for Pittsburgh, from Pittsburgh for Smith.
Pass.
I'd probably do that.
For what rounder?
Fourth rounder. Yeah. Okay. I'd do it. I'd like to get more, but I would do that.
Sure. Conditional 2019 seventh pick from Columbus for Drew Miller.
Yes.
Anything you can get for him, just take it.
Same question for Ott.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I got a 2017 sixth from Chicago for Yurko.
No.
I'd take that.
I mean,
I'd want more.
It seems, yeah, but it seems like he's never going to
more play for all of these.
Yeah.
Sorry, Peter, what are you saying?
No, I'm just saying, like, it seems like Yurko, like, they're not really, you know. It seems like we might as well just get anything for him at this point. Like, he's just going to sit every game.
Is he? He's eligible for the expansion draft, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So is he just one of those guys that the Wings are just going to hang on to just so they have, because they have to expose someone? I don't know.
Could be. I don't know. Last one is we get Washington's first for Vanek, but we retain $1.2 million. And we also send either a prospect or the third rounder that Toronto owes us.
No.
That sounds...
I'm not giving them anything other than...
Yeah, why do we have to sweeten the pot for Washington's pick? Because that should be 31st.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Pass.
Philosophy time!
Oh, I love philosophy. I hate it, actually.
If Steve Ott fights a tree while alone in the forest and nobody is around to see it, does he make a sound when he loses?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, ah, I lost to a tree.
Does he still affect a Red Wings victory?
Yeah. Does he still inspire the other trees? Oh, wait, no, it wouldn't be other trees. No, they're the other team. Never mind.
Yeah, the rest of the fucking mushrooms in that forest get all feisty.
Yeah. I didn't think that through.
All right, Frank Minetti wants to know, are the Wings stuck in purgatory mode until they commit to a rebuild?
Why don't you answer this one?
Somebody say duh for me, please.
Duh.
Duh.
Have we been in purgatory the last, like, four seasons? Then the answer is yes.
Yeah. All right, that's all that question I want to ask. P.D. Corrin, with Mr. I passing, who will take over control of the Wings? That's Chris Illich, right?
Yep.
Can we expect any changes in philosophy? We've kind of touched on this, but if you want to get any deeper on that, go ahead.
I'd just say yes. I think there'll be more changes than you think.
Like, do you think we're gonna go to like have a reverse Wirtz thing going on? Like, Chris is worried about money than winning?
Possibly. Yeah. Super. I don't think it'll get that bad, but I think there's a bigger chance that Holland isn't the GM of this team next year than you guys do. Now, I honestly am not basing this on anything. I have no inside information or sources or whatnot. This is just pure speculation. But I just think there's a bigger chance than you guys think. That's all.
Look at you whispering that like you know shit.
That's just to make.
I'm just saying. I can see your hands in your pocket, and you're just like kicking a rock at your feet.
Who says that I'm wearing pants?
Yeah. Wing 69 asked a question that he's then answered. So good job on that. Thanks for answering it for us, doing our job. Rhode Island Red, which came first, the line blender or the talent gaps? And do you think line blending fixes them or makes them worse?
Actually thinking about this one. I don't know.
I think the talent gaps probably came first because you look at, you know, any team 20, 30 years ago, you had your bona fide top line players and then you had guys who were nothing more than boxers on skates. Like, that's a pretty big talent gap.
Well, I'm just trying to remember back in the day, like, how often did Bowman mess with the lines and then, you know, late 90s, early 2000s?
Bowman loved messing with the lines.
Yeah.
Babcock didn't really break out the blender until the Red Wings started falling off.
It's true.
So I think the talent gap came first. And I don't know that it necessarily hurts. I think the talent gap hurts.
Yeah.
I think trying to balance out the talent on the lines actually is a detriment because if you have, you know, if you have, I'm trying to think of like the best way to describe it. I guess if you have like two really good lines and then two really bad lines, that's better than having four kind of meh lines because, you know, the two really good lines are more likely to actually do something than any like kind of meh lines, because that's kind of what we have, you know, this year.
I think the obvious detriment to the line blending is that it takes away any kind of ability to get chemistry with your line mates, you know. So I think it's one of those things where like it could help in the short term, like if you just want to kind of like wake your team up, but I think doing it too much I think messes with your team.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the talent of the lines, because we've seen lots of blended lines with really skilled, talented players who we know are really good passers throw pucks to areas where one of his line mates isn't because they don't have chemistry. Yeah. And we've seen lines with bad players who can't complete passes because their hands are made of stone. So, kind of depends, huh?
Pretty much.
Okay, Baby Larks has a bunch of just for fun trade hypotheticals that I want to see if any, like if you say no to any of these.
oh boy.
Tatar for Drouin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mantha for Panarin.
I mean, this is the only one I have to think about for a second.
Yes.
I mean, I think you do it, but I think Mantha is going to be very special.
So that's the one I say no to. I like Mantha too much. It's probably not a good idea, but I like Mantha more than Panarin.
Well, yeah, Panarin's a lot older still, isn't he?
It's like 80.
Yeah. I'd rather get more years
out of Mantha. What is age, though?
Yeah.
Just a construct, man. Larkin for Marner?
Yeah. Yes.
Athanasiu and Nyquist for Tavares?
Yes.
Yes.
Shahan for Cronwall's missing knee?
Sure.
Yes.
Mrazek and he
does things other than scoring goals for this team.
Which one, Cronwall or Shane? Because I'm not seeing much of it either of that right now.
Shane, I'm just whatever. Next one.
You were thinking of the puppies, weren't you?
Yeah.
Trying to make. Okay, Mrazek and Green for Hedman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in a heartbeat.
I mean, we save Coro and we're good to go.
Okay, out of all those, you can make only one. Which one?
I only get one?
You can only make one of those trades. Which one do you do?
I'd say Larkin for Marner. I think Marner's going to be the best player out of all of them on there.
Hedman.
I take Hedman.
I was going to say get the defenseman, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, Peter, idiot.
but if Marner's producing a whole bunch of goals, then that would help.
No, that's true. Yeah. Okay, Happy Pappy 96, just for fun. I'm going to read this whole question. This may come off as a stupid question, but try anyways.
Oh, boy. I take the duck-sized.
I like this question, actually. If we had drafted Subban over Smith, do you think Smith would have reached the potential everyone expected him to in Montreal, and vice versa? Do you think Subban would have developed into the player he is today if he had come up through the wing system? Is it our fault, or were we unlucky? I know this is an impossible question to answer, but I'm curious to see what your thoughts are.
I think Smith would be better than he is now if he was drafted by Montreal. I think he would have come up early, sooner. He would have been a good old Canadian boy in a Canadian market. So Subban would probably be a little bit worse than he is, because he would have had to overripen, and he would have been frustrated and taken too long he would have been down there too long, and the Wings would have waited too long to bring him up, and I think that would have stunted him. So I think there's one each. Smith is a little better, Subban's a little worse, but Subban would still be ultimately better than Smith.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna follow up
there we are.
Yeah,
Peter, Lauren,
I'd agree with that. The curiosity in that question is, I think that Subban would definitely have spent too long in the minors developing, because that's what the status quo was for the team at the time that they were both drafted. But I do wonder how much more quickly he comes up to learn under guys like Lidstrom, with his obvious, the obvious talents that he has displayed his entire career. You know, would those have been, would they have gotten him called up to the Red Wings sooner?
See, I mean,
I'd like to think so, but this is, of course, back in 08, 09, 2010, it is impossible to say. I agree with the idea that, Subban's a little bit worse and Smith's a little bit better. How much, I don't know, but I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
I still think one of the biggest mistakes the Wings ever made was not bringing Smith up Lidstrom's last year to play, not necessarily be on a pair with him, but to have the experience of being around him and learning from him, and they blew that. That was their transition from a number one defenseman to another number one defenseman.
I think that Subban would be in the KHL right now. I don't think Babcock could have taken him well at all.
That's right. He never did play in Sochi, did he?
No.
That's an interesting point.
But
that's bad. Because I think he would have been really cool for a city like Detroit.
Yeah. But no, that was a very good question, Happy Pappy. Definitely not a stupid one. Silver97RWA says, I missed the prospect report. That's not a question. But we do too. Is there any chance what?
All the prospects are in Detroit now.
No, the Griffins are doing really well, and I feel that... we have not covered them as well as we previously had. Unfortunately, we lost Michelle to real life. She's not dead or anything. She's just got very busy. And so we have yet to find somebody to replace her. the recommendation that we should add somebody to do that is heard. Probably not going to do that right now, but definitely on our minds, so thank you for bringing that up. Peter's Glove wants to know about draft picks. I'm not on draft picks. Kyle's our draft guy.
I've looked at mock drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want Liljegren if we got a shot at him? You got to take him, right?
You take Nolan first. If you don't get Nolan, you take Nico. And if you can't get Nico, I think there's a No, I'm no expert. I'll preface this, but I think there's a solid cluster there. But I probably, if I don't get Nico or Nolan, I would probably lean towards Liljegren. So, just because they need a defenseman.
Datsukian Freak wants to know if Ken Holland had accepted the promotion years ago, how much better or worse would the current state of the team be in, and why?
I think they'd be better. I don't know how much more better. Just because I like Yzerman, so.
Yeah, that's assuming an Yzerman run team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the question is, how much is Ken Holland pulling the puppet strings of Yzerman?
If he's about, I don't know.
So, I don't know, I think they'd be better, but I don't know by how much.
Also, when Kenny finally moves on, who do you think replaces him?
Someone from outside the organization.
No, it's what's his face, Martin.
Ryan Martin.
I almost said Ricky Martin just because that was the first name that came to mind. I was like, well, that's not right.
I don't think it'll be Ryan Martin.
You don't think so?
No.
Do you think he'd stay on as assistant GM, or do you think they'd revamp?
I think he'd be gone. I mean, if Holland gets let go, like my potential theory, I think they go outside the organization. If they stay inside, Draper.
Oh, God. All right. That'd be interesting. He'd be trying to trade players for a dollar.
Who are the open GM candidates out there right now?
Geez, I don't even know.
Mike Milbury?
Oh, dear God. I would have to take a lot of time off.
Islander fan over here.
Prashant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
Prashant. I'd take Prashant.
I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight after you said that.
That's not nice to Prashant.
Yeah.
Old Gus Jiggins wants to know. Shahan, I'm moving on to the next question.
No, I know. It's just fantastic to hear that out loud.
Yeah, I really do like that name. Shahan for Lazar seems to make too much sense for everyone involved. It would be amusing to trade nothing for nothing. Thoughts?
I don't know.
I don't know.
What was that?
I really want to see. I'm kind of stuck on that idea of Shahan scoring without actually scoring it now.
Yeah, Lazar's got some good pun potential.
That is true.
I don't really give a shit. Lazar brings
Perk up.
Yeah. All right. Katie96 wants to know if JJ has to begin the podcast with a new slogan and not best day ever. What should that slogan be?
Well, you said best night ever today, so
yeah,
there you go.
All right. I was recently thinking, fuck your face for asking, but that may be a little, that may be a little too angry. All right, angry a day hostile. Today. Yeah. Not the way you want to start off a podcast.
No.
What was Poochie's catchphrase from the Itchy and Scratchy show?
Oh, I don't remember.
You should take that.
Yeah.
I'm the bad fan for not remembering.
Catch you on the flip side, dude meisters. Not.
What? Dude,
that's what it said. It's on Wikipedia page. Yeah. To the extreme.
The extreme. Wasn't that it? Yeah.
All right. I finally got to Griffin's Nest a question about the Ferk thing. So, the mythological strength of Ferk's shot has been going around the AHL the past few weeks as players try and guess how hard the shot actually is. He is absolutely lighting it up on the power play with a dumpster fire of the power play this year and a more than likely failed season in terms of the Wings' standards. Do we give him a shot? His accuracy is, shall we say, non-existent at times, but do we try and maybe get some life into the team? Because why not try anything and see what happens? Go from waived to signed to waived again to signed by the original team that waved him back to the NHL. Note, he is very much a one-way player, I'm aware, but would at least give some hope when watching the team on the power play. I'm sold. You sold?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. I zoned out halfway through, but yeah.
Grandma Florkin asks,
Can he shoot a knuckle puck?
I don't, probably not. I just had the awful thought pop in my head that if Ablaker is going to keep playing on that front, might as well. But that's that's very mean, and I feel bad for saying it out loud.
Then he shouldn't. Would have PTSD flashbacks.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, FNG snuck one in like just 2 minutes ago.
Oh.
If the Wings win the lottery from the 10th spot, who do you call first to gloat about it?
Colorado. Really
make phone calls.
Yeah,
that's like an old person kind of thing. Nobody calls people anymore.
I think the first thing I do is go on Twitter.
Yeah. I would text my friend Seth, who I grew up with, and he's an Avs fan. So,
and isn't Anthrax Jones the obvious choice? I think Lauren.
I would want to see Kyle's interactions with him.
I was pretty sure Lauren said that first. Mm-hmm.
You don't even subtweet him. You just flat out.
Yeah.
Ha 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 at Anthrax Jones.
We should all do that.
And then probably Mile High Hockey from there.
Jibble Scribbits.
Even though he has us blocked, I'd probably directly
ask. Oh, he has us blocked? Wait, didn't we drink beers with him in Denver?
Not Jibble Scribbits. Sorry. Oh. Adrian Dater.
Oh, Dater.
That'd be amazing.
So, yeah, literally any Colorado fan I can find. Also Arizona fans, and I don't know, everybody. I would laugh for a long time.
Yeah,
it's got to be Anthrax Jones. That's the very first person that I tweet or talk to about it. I don't call anybody to say, haha.
Okay. Any more questions?
No, that is the end of our questions.
All right, then, do you guys have any final hockey-related thoughts?
At least we can't lose for the next week.
Oh, it's true, we can't.
Could have said that in Positivity Corner.
Oh, that's true.
Brendan Smith specifically said he's going to Florida to hang out with his brother Riley during the break. I hope he just stays there.
Cool. For JJ, Lauren, Peter, Kyle, Graham, Prashant, and everybody else at Winging It Motown.
I'm Winging It Motown.
See you after the trade deadline. I'm